Today's episode of Locked On Eagles is sponsored by Built Bar, the best protein bar out there. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code Locked On, and you're going to get 20% off your next order at Built Bar.
You are Locked On Eagles, your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, Eagles fans, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, your daily podcast on the Philadelphia Eagles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Louis DiBiase joining you on this Monday edition of the show, recapping the Eagles, I would say big win, at least circumstantially, against the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football to maintain their position of first place in the NFC East. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Gino Camilleri. You can follow us on Twitter at DiBiaseLOE, at Gino_LOE, and make sure you subscribe to Locked On Eagles on any podcast platform or on LockedOnEagles.com. We're posting at least four to six episodes a week downloaded into your phone. So again, me and Gino, we're going to get into this game that happened last night that, Gino, normally, look, against the Dallas Cowboys, you win by double digits at home, prime time, to stay in first place in the NFC East. Normally that would make me feel really good, but this is the worst I think I've ever felt about that kind of win. And I'll just start by saying, you know, we're going to start with this. It's because of Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson just not being good enough once again this year. And this is something that hasn't happened, I would say, in the past month. But, you know, what we saw from Doug and Carson at the beginning of this season has reared its ugly head once again. And I'll start with Carson Wentz, and we'll get into Doug Peterson later on as well. But just the way, and look, the way Wentz played, this isn't a referendum on him. This doesn't confirm what, like, some people are spinning this as Wentz's performance yesterday against Dallas. It confirms what they've seen all along throughout his career. Mm-hmm. It doesn't negate how good he's looked against some top-tier defenses the last month of the season. Carson Wentz the past month has been incredible. The vast majority of his career consists of a damn good quarterback, a top-tier quarterback, and you still want to make the playoffs this year because he can win you any game, like we said last week. This doesn't confirm anything else. This doesn't negate anything that we've said about him. This doesn't negate his past proven track record. I'm not benching him yet, but what I will say is the fact that he has regressed once again to this Jameis Winston-esque player. This year is concerning because this is the first time in his career, I would say. Wentz has had some slumps. 2016 against Cincinnati and Baltimore, you know, mechanically, just at the end of his rookie year, he was struggling. I would say in 2018, it was an up-and-down season because of injuries. Last year, that stretch between New England and Seattle, not very good. But this is the first time, I'd say, in his career where Wentz has had four-plus games, or maybe more than half of his games in a season, where he just has been a liability. This is an interesting stat by Ruben Frank. He's the first Eagles quarterback not to have a 100-plus passer rating in any of his first eight games this year since Doug Peterson in 1999. He's got the most turnovers in the league. He has more himself than 30 teams. He has the most turnover-worthy plays. And, Gino, look, it's not good enough right now. And, again, it doesn't confirm anything else, right, any of these narratives. Mm-hmm. But what I will say is I'm concerned that he regressed to this level of player again. I thought we had moved past this because normally when Wentz fixes things, he fixes it for the entire season. And normally I've looked past the turnovers this year because I think he's just trying to make plays with nothing around him. But there was no excuse yesterday, man. There were weapons all around him. They had great field position all game. He faced a historically bad defense, and the looks were just terrible on all four turnovers. And so I'm a little concerned, man. I mean, this is something I thought we had moved past, and instead he looked like not a control Josh Allen or Jameis Winston.
Don't you dare. Don't you
I
ever
mean,
dare.
I mean, he did, though.
Don't
Let's call
you
a spade
ever
a
dare.
I'm not saying that's who he is as a player, but that
he
is what he looks
yet
like.
He's never thrown for less than 50% completion in a game, something Josh Allen has
right, no,
done
no, no, I'm not
multiple,
saying he is that player. I'm saying last no. night, though, that is what he looked like.
Yes, absolutely, and we know that that is Carson Wentz, and I'll keep saying he's the Incredible Hulk. Like, when things go great, he can be an Avenger, but when things are bad, it's pure destruction.
But, you know, the issue, though, is that throughout his career, he's been able to be aggressive and efficient, though. Like, this isn't what we've seen from Wentz throughout his career.
I totally get it. But, I mean, contextualize everything, Lou. You say he had all of his weapons. I mean, he's still only got one healthy offensive lineman from the beginning of the year. He didn't have Miles Sanders. But when you look at the whole scope of everything, like, I don't think that you can pinpoint this season in the bad play to a single person, especially not just to Carson Wentz, but everybody included. I think if you look at yesterday, the coaching staff has to be involved with that. I think there is, man, Doug Peterson talks about self-scouting so much, Lou. It just seems like he can't help but hurt Carson Wentz as well, man, because when does Carson play his best? When he's in a rhythm, he could get those throws out early, he can make things happen in those intermediate areas where he's still excelling if you look at those numbers, but where he's bad is when he has to hold onto the ball, operate out of structure for over 3 seconds at times. I mean, that's where the fine line of balance has to come into the play. When he's cooking in those short to intermediate areas, he's one of the better quarterbacks in football.
No, I get that, but, Gino, but sometimes this is self-inflicted, though. Like, I don't think anything was helping Carson yesterday.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, when the game plan to throw the ball down the field multiple times when it's 20-plus mile-an-hour winds, like, you have to find that balance and say, okay, as a quarterback, I have to understand the scenario. I have to understand that we have the ball in good field position. And, yes, you do have to be better, Carson, but you got to stop saying it. You have to go and show it. And
yeah. I'm tired of him saying he's got to be better, man. No, I'm going to lose totally my mind agree. If I hear that one more time.
I'll hold Carson as accountable as anybody because I'm his number one supporter, and I want to see him do well. And the thing is, when he plays well, like, the good plays are so good. I mean, that touchdown throw to Travis Fulham, it was beautiful. But those interceptions, man, like, they're not going to fly against Seattle and Green Bay and all them. But you look at it at this current point in time, this bye week, Lou, I don't think could have came at any better time because Carson has to sit down, and he has to realize this. He has to realize that we're halfway through the season. We barely are in a position to be in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. We're coming off a win that, yes, it was a win, but I played bad myself. But when I play well, I see how far this team can go. And he has to realize that. And he has to realize for once that he has weapons outside that he could trust. And he doesn't have to be a hero and play hero ball. And Doug has to tell him that, Carson, you don't have to play hero ball. But at the same time, the offensive line has to help protect him a little bit better. Doug has to do a better job getting him into a rhythm. And he has to do a better job understanding time and place and what's going on. Like, when your quarterback isn't doing well, the worst thing you could do is have him throw the ball on 2 fourth downs when you were running the ball all over them.
Yeah, the play calling on 3rd and 4th down yesterday continues to be brutal for Doug Peterson.
And that's why I look at Carson and I'm like, yes, he does do stupid things, but he's also in this situation which doesn't promote any good. You know, like, I mean, he's in this rhythm that is not getting into a rhythm. And frankly, that's not when Carson operates the best. And we've seen that multiple times throughout his career, Lou. Like, when were we going to get that up tempo? When were we going to get it yesterday? We never did. And a lot of it has to go back to the basics. When does Carson perform the best? When does Doug do best play calling? It's when they keep things simple. It's when they understand the strengths of their quarterback, understand the strengths of their team. I don't think that's what Philly did yesterday. When their offensive line had 4 of the 5 top graded players on offense, according to PFF yesterday, why were we not running the ball more yesterday?
That's what I'm saying, man. It's frustrating that Wentz keeps having his amazing games when he's got nothing around him, and then it seems like every time he struggles, he's got guys healthy again. I mean, yesterday he had Travis Fulgham back, Jalen Reagor. The offensive line looked good. I thought Boston Scott and Corey Clement did some incredible running. Yes, the play calling again with Doug Peterson continues to be head-scratching and inconsistent. I'm just frustrated, though, that every time it seems like they're back at 100%, then you suddenly have Carson Wentz being an issue again. And yesterday it's frustrating, too, because even with Doug kind of holding you back, I mean, you got the ball at like midfield every single possession. You're playing a historically bad defense. This Cowboys defense in 2020 has given up the 8th most points all time through this stretch of games. And so the fact that you only put 15, that's frustrating. And that shows up mostly on the shoulders of Doug and of Carson. And they're just, you know, it's kind of like in basketball, Gino, where if you shoot here with Wentz, like, again, we've looked past him being aggressive because we want him to be aggressive. That's what makes right. Carson Wentz great. Because the majority of the time, he's going to pull a rabbit out of the hat and make a play for you. It's kind of like in basketball where you shoot a three. Look, if it's a good look and you miss it, I'm going to say good look. We'll get the next one. Keep shooting that. But yesterday, and again, that's why I'm okay with a lot of the turnovers this year. Yesterday's turnovers were just terrible. The first fumble, he's just got to get rid of the football. That play is dead. The interceptions to Trayvon Diggs, they're right in Diggs' hands. If you targeted Diggs yesterday and you didn't hit him right in the numbers, Diggs was getting fleeced. And yet Wentz gave him two easy interceptions on plays that just should not, didn't need to happen down the field. And the mechanics, too, were an issue. I didn't trust the ball was going to come out easily any play. I thought the footwork was sloppy. I thought his throwing motion was way too elongated. It's got to be tighter, more compressed. When he's more accurate, that's how it looks. And so these are things that, again, right now, I'm not saying bench Carson Wentz for Jalen Hurts. I'm not saying this is who Carson Wentz has been. I'm not even saying that's who he's been all season. He's had an incredible month of October. But what I will say is this is something that we've got to watch the rest of the year, because this is the first time in his career where he's had this many games where we've had to talk about these kind of issues.
Yeah, for those that want Carson to be held accountable, these next eight games are going to be the biggest example of that.
They're so critical, and there's some tough opponents, man.
Very much so, and it doesn't get easier. That's the thing with the NFC East. It's like I always kind of feel like it's going to be a crappy game regardless, because they're always battles. You know, like there's always something that goes awry. It's this next stretch of games where I'm really going to put that onus on Carson Wentz. You know, like this is the time now, Carson, just to look at it. You have some receivers that you can grow with. That's one reason I'm not going to bench the kid, because since 2017, he's never had continuity. They finally have two young kids in, I mean, Travis Fulham and Jalen Reagor, that are giving me that DeShaun and Macklin vibe almost.
Doug even talked about it today on the radio. He was saying how the difference between now and 2017 was stability.
Absolutely, and you have to understand that. And the thing is, who are the guys that he's throwing to, Lou? I mean, when you're targeting these guys downfield, it's John Hightower twice again. That connection is going to take time. It doesn't happen overnight. And that's a lot of the things that people have to understand, too, that he's playing with a lot of rookie wide receivers. Timing is going to be an issue. They didn't have that offseason to kind of get them into a rhythm. You have to take all these things into account. But the one thing that Carson can do, and as a leader he has to do, is take it upon himself to not put this team in a bad position, because so many times we have seen him as the Hulk just doing these unbelievable things, taking down Thor, and then we've seen him just destroy the city of Philadelphia where he's turning the ball over, he's fumbling it multiple times.
What does he got to do to stop fumbling, man? He might have the worst ball protection I've ever seen from a quarterback.
I mean, is this monster.
Is this like Michael Vick?
He's got to keep two hands on the ball.
Is this
like
Michael Vick, man, where he just won't slide and Carson just won't fumble the ball? I mean, that's what it feels like.
That's maybe what it comes down to. But when you look at it, Lou, I just want to put the one big thing out there. Putting a rookie Jalen Hurts in this scenario is not going to help things. Like, as much as people want to...
No, if anything, Gino, I'm trading him before tomorrow's deadline. That's what I'm doing. I'm getting him out of there, because the only explanation I can give to why Carson keeps reverting back to this, I don't know. I mean, with Hurts behind him, look, that's something, I don't know if that's the case, but if I'm the Eagles, right now my priority is getting Carson Wentz right, not seeing if Jalen Hurts can be another answer. I'm shipping Hurts the hell out of here.
Right, like, what do you think is going to be your longest-term plan successfully, especially in these next eight games?
It's not Carson, by the way. It's not Hurts. I'm drafting a guy. I mean, if that was ever the actual scenario that presented itself, I don't even think Hurts is the other guy that's up next.
Right, like, I honestly think, like, if you were going to give somebody a chance, I think Nate for a game. Like, I honestly do. Like, I don't think a rookie in a shortened offseason where you didn't even want to give him first-team reps... I mean, he's not ready for that time and place. So what do you have to do moving forward? You have who you have, and you have Carson Wentz. You have an unbelievably big contract. He's not going anywhere. Like, let's just call spade a spade. He is not going anywhere. So to succeed, let's stop ripping on the clothes he wears in press conferences and find out the solutions. Like, how can Carson Wentz be
His
better?
Outfit was pretty ridiculous.
Dude, I mean, from Russell Westbrook to Cam Newton, like, I'm not going to hate on the guy. I don't personally attack football players unless they're a very good, bad football player, like Nate Geary, which I think the linebackers yesterday played pretty dang good.
We will get into the positives.
We will definitely get into the positive for sure. But where we stand with Carson Wentz, we are definitely at a crossroads. It's, can he be this guy? moving forward? And the answer is no. He cannot be a liability moving forward, because we talk about he needs to be the player that we win because of. And we've seen it multiple times in his career. We've seen it multiple times this season.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the recency bias, man. It's like the games 2 weeks ago didn't even happen.
Well, again, bothers me, man, is like me and you are talking about how big of an issue he has been a lot of the times this year, more than half the time. And I think it's actually kind of fitting that the bye week is halfway through, because Carson can look at his 2020 season and say, okay, half of it, that's the player I want to be. Half of it, I got to get rid of that player. So now it's, all right, in the second half of the year, which one of those Carson Wentzes that we've seen this year, who are you going to be? But what I don't like is we're holding him accountable, but what I don't like is people always want every game, every result to end in some long-term answer. Like, it confirms something like, okay, that means now Carson Wentz isn't the guy because of this game and this game. Maybe it's just for peace of mind because they don't like things open-ended. But that's my issue, is that every game feels like a referendum on Wentz. Like, okay, this confirms what we've seen his entire career. It's confirmed what we've seen all of 2020. And that's just not the case.
For sure, man. Like, and that's the thing that you and I look at. We look at it holistically. When has Wentz ever had like this much continuity at wide receiver? Like, we haven't seen it in a while, so we're going to see hopefully an uptick in that. Hopefully Doug Peterson can figure out the play calling. Maybe he has to give up play calling. I don't know.
I think Jeffrey Lurie, man, is going to look hard into, if it's not this year, in 2021, he already was questioning Doug's offensive prowess, I think, this offseason, with getting rid of Carson Walsh, Mike Groh, bringing in a lot of these new head coaches coaches that were part of the Shanahan tree and the McVay tree. I think Lurie was already questioning things, man. I would not be surprised next year if Doug gets stripped of play calling if this does not turn around. I mean, you got to hold him accountable, too.
I absolutely think it boils down to one thing, and I mentioned this last week or 2 weeks ago. This team cannot get three units to play all on the same day.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And that's on the head coach.
If you look at what football is, it's being successful in all three phases. And
it's cheesy, but it's the ultimate team sport, man.
When you boil anything down, everything, you have to go back to basics. Like, if you want to improve your strength in the weight room, what do? You go back to the basics, you learn form, you learn function, and then your strength will increase. What do you do when you want to learn plays in football and get better? You practice. What do you do when you want to get all three phases to go together? I don't know. You can't figure it out right now. And frankly, as basic as it sounds, it is the ultimate downfall to this team, because yesterday we were calling on the defense to step up. They finally do. But what happens? Special teams once again lets you down. Yeah. And offense once again lets you down.
And against such an easy matchup, man. Like, yesterday I was, after watching Ben DiNucci, I just wanted finally, for the first time in years, a convincing win where you just put up 30 plus on one of the worst defenses ever, and Ben DiNucci looked like the worst starting quarterback I'd ever seen.
Absolutely, and ultimately, like, yeah, the defense won you that game, Lou, but why weren't they pressuring him early on? Like, why weren't they
getting... Yeah, the fact that it was almost 10-0 early is pathetic.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I think there's blame to go around for everybody. I think as it stands, I graded this team out today. Halfway through the season, I gave the offense a C. Mm-hmm. I gave coaching a C-. Yep. I gave special teams a D. And I gave the offense or the defense a C-.
They are
a below average football team.
It's a 3-4-1 football team, yeah.
Absolutely. And they have a lot of holes to address. We know this. And this isn't revisionist history, Lou. We have said this for how many weeks on this show now?
We've been saying it all season, even with wanting to make the playoffs.
They have a long way to go, regardless of if they make the playoffs. But the things you could look at right now are you have young guys that are stepping up when it matters. You have reps that are going around to kids that, frankly, in past seasons probably wouldn't have got that, and they probably would have given them to some veterans. I mean, kids like Michael Jacquet are getting meaningful reps now. Guys like
it's because they cut our boy Zul and Sid, though, man.
Yeah, I know. But what it boils down to is that they are doing some basic things well that will help them move forward. It's just finding out those areas, those marginal areas where you're killing yourself, and a lot of it is self-inflicted, man. Like, you could fix that. And
most of it is self-inflicted. I'm not giving Trayvon Diggs credit for either of those picks yesterday.
No, and if it doesn't change after 16 games, then we can have a discussion.
Yes.
But in four quarters after 12 very good quarters, I'm not going to change things long term.
We're not benching Carson Wentz yet. But again, like me,
but in the short term, something has to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And eventually, long term, if things do not change, if Carson Wentz continues to turn the ball over at this rate and his mechanics continue to be this inconsistent, then yeah, I'm not saying long term trade him, bench him long term. But we even saw Donovan McNabb in 2008 when that team made the NFC title. Andy Reid sat him down for that Baltimore game, and Kevin Cobb, another fellow second round pick, went in the football game, and it kind of woke McNabb up. So I'm not saying that's something that's off the table. Carson Wentz isn't immune to being held accountable. I just don't want one game or two games or a couple games to be the reason that you bench a quarterback who for, 5 years has been a top tier player. Because I still think this year, if you're going to make the playoffs, if you're going to have a chance when you eventually make the playoffs, number 11 has to be under center. It's not going to be Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is not fixing this.
Right, that's the thing. I mean, you have what you have. We've seen what can be successful. You've been to the playoffs 3 out of the 4 seasons with Carson Wentz winning you meaningful regular season games. Mm-hmm. We want him to get playoff experience, and now we're going to look at this as a negative. That's not how I want to look at it. Like, yes, it stinks, and yes, you have to address it. But in my book, Lou, and we're going to stick with the corny cliches, there's wins and there's lessons. Carson has to learn these lessons. Like, the whole team has to learn these lessons, and that's where you can improve. The self-scouting that Doug talks about, that's how you improve. Getting back to the basics. Carson improving his throwing motion, improving his mechanics. Like, that will help him loads. Not holding on the ball too long. Like, it's the basics.
Just picking your
football.
Spots better, man. Like, knowing when to
He's
give up.
He's not Ben DiNucci, a guy that you have to bring in Wildcats to play other like meaningful plays for, which they do because they have Jalen Hurts, but he's a guy that is a winning quarterback in this league. I still think he's a top 15 guy in this league. Just because he's playing bad now, yes, it totally deters the fact that he isn't an elite guy right now, but he has those skill sets inside of him. And
again, you've seen it for the last month of the season, Gino. So absolutely. Even this year, it's not like we've seen a player for 8 weeks be who we saw yesterday. So if that was the case, we'd both be saying bench him. But that hasn't been the case for a lot of this season. Hold we'll continue to talk about this. We got to hit one break, and then I do want to get into some positives because the Eagles did win. They are in first place, even at 3-4-1. And I think some Eagles fans here do want to hear some positives about a win against Dallas, because there's nothing the city of Philadelphia hates more than the Dallas Cowboys. Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri, joining you on this Monday edition of Locked On Eagles, and it's sponsored today by Pepsi. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season has been different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch. It's the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. All right, Eagles fans, Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri, recapping the Eagles, I would say, big win, again, circumstantially, against the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday night. It wasn't convincing. It was sloppy. It doesn't feel like a big-time victory, Gino. But nonetheless, the Eagles are in first place. They maintained their position of first place in the NFC East. They get much-needed rest now here to get healthy with this bye week. You've got the NFL trade deadline tomorrow. We will do a deadline podcast tomorrow, Eagles fans, so be sure to subscribe. That will be coming tomorrow. So it's perfect timing for a nice win against Dallas to stay in first. You get a bye week. And I would say, Gino, like we talked all segment one about the inefficiency, the liability that was Carson Wentz yesterday and Doug Peterson, the two most important pieces of the puzzle, held you back. But I would say at the same time, it wasn't all negative on the field yesterday. I mean, there were a lot of positives, and you even mentioned it. You know, finally, the defense just wins them a game that they needed to.
Finally, man, it felt nice. But the thing is, I still think there's some areas that you could look at, like they should have been bringing pressure all along. I think Jim has done that successfully in his career against younger quarterbacks in their first
starts.
Yeah, he
was too cute early on. They were giving DiNucci way too much respect.
Absolutely, he was very cute. And I compared it to my guy over at Manchester City, Pep Guardiola. He always seems to do this in Champions League, where he just gets too cute and overthinks himself. And getting back to the basics, let your front four go after him. Blitz the young quarterback. I think the front four played a phenomenal game.
Brandon Graham, man. Can we talk about BG?
Oh, yeah, we have to. Because I tweet it every single time he makes a play that this man has been worth every cent that Philadelphia has ever paid him.
How many times has he saved this team's ass? I mean, he's such a good player.
Every time, man. It seems like every big play comes down to him. He graded out as the highest pass rusher at the edge position this week, according to Pro Football Focus. I mean, he is just aging like a fine wine. And, man, he won his battles when it mattered. That's what you want out of your dominant edge rusher. And at 32 years old, Lou, like, that's impressive.
He's getting better, it seems like, every year. He's third in the league in sacks this year with 7. He's always gotten pressure, Gino, but this year it's finally resulting in sacks.
Yeah, I mean, you might see 2 to 3 guys with double-digit sacks this year, Lou, realistically.
Yeah, you
could get BG. Fletcher Cox is having another big season. I mean, he just passes 50 sacks on his 50. Career.
Yep.
Then Josh Sweat is right in the mix as well. And, I mean, Javon Hargrave, I thought, had a better game pass rushing yesterday. I think they're finally getting that rotation to what they want it to be up front. And on the back end, Lou, I think they played a pretty sound game. And it all kind of led to being without number 47 in the middle when you have some athletic guys at the linebacker position and the safety position that you
linebacker
can kind of
actually
move all
wasn't,
over.
Yeah, linebacker wasn't terrible. TJ Edwards, I thought, Gino, had an incredible game. He was everywhere, tackling really well. He saved a big touchdown tripping up Zeke, and then he had that strip sack where Ronnie McLeod picks it up and runs it in for a touchdown. I thought Edwards looked good, Singleton. I thought the linebackers actually were fine. I mean, I didn't hear about them outside of Edwards, and for good reasons.
Definitely, and we talked about basically before this season how we wanted to see that defensive backfield deployed, and we talk about linebackers don't matter, and it's because I think you can get by with guys like TJ Edwards and Singleton. TJ was so sound and has been so sound in his gaps in getting off of blocks and keying and diagnosing and getting in those run-stuffing positions. And Singleton has been the cover guy that you needed on the back end. I think he's done a fantastic job in zone coverage. He almost made another pick six play yesterday.
Yeah, he did.
I think that duo is what you need for the rest of this year. And just continue to let those guys play because, frankly, I thought they did a fantastic job on the back end. I thought they threw a bunch of different coverages at them. When guys like Jaquette had to come in and play, man, you might have just found your cornerback number 2 and your wide receiver number 2 of the future off of undrafted free agency and waivers in Travis Fulham and Michael Jaquette. Because Jaquette played fantastic yesterday, Lou. I thought Avante had a pretty good game out there. I think you're just continuing to find young kids that could come in and are athletically gifted to play meaningful minutes on both sides of the ball and on the defensive side of the ball yesterday. Even Marcus Epps had a good game, Lou. Like, it was refreshing to see these guys go out there and play how we thought they could play.
So it's interesting, though. I do want to preface this with saying it was Ben DiNucci, so I hope Jim Schwartz doesn't think now this is a reason.
Hey, you still
got to
win your one-on-one
Marcus Epps
battles against Amari Cooper.
Oh, yeah, no, for
against
sure.
Against all those guys.
And Darius Slay did erase Amari Cooper before he got hurt yesterday, so
yeah,
you did not hear
he did,
from
he
Cooper.
Started getting passes right. His way. It's kind of funny.
And I was concerned heading into the game about Avante Maddox and Nickell Robey-Coleman. Their matchup with Gallup and CeeDee Lamb, that was the one matchup I was really concerned with on defense, but they held their own. And, Gino, linebacker doesn't matter that much when you have safeties that were playing as well as Rodney McLeod was yesterday. I mean, Rodney McLeod was just all over the ball every single week. And Will Parks looked really good. I'm the Eagles, I know there was that report that Will Parks was on the trade block. Even with Marcus Epps having a good game, I'm not trading Will Parks. I really liked what I saw from him yesterday, too.
No, yeah, that's what we're saying. In long term, one game doesn't change your entire outlook. But you're right, and our good friend over at Lockdown Broncos, Cody Rourke, is a very, very big proponent of Will Parks. Says he's a very fantastic guy. When he interviewed him in the locker room, there, he's a Philly kid. You saw how much that game meant to him yesterday. He went and was out on the Eagles logo after the team went in, after the pregame hype up, and I thought he played fantastic.
He's getting his footing under him now, coming off that injury. Gino, I thought yesterday he looked healthy and explosive.
Yeah, you have these chess piece guys because you're not like singling yourself into a hole with 47 having to be on the field in coverage. And
you love
the rest
not
of
having
the guys
47 out there, huh?
Man, I thought
you seem
yesterday
a lot more relaxed about it.
I saw a ton of like quarters coverage yesterday, and that's what you have to do, man. Like, when was the best coverage matchup that I've seen outside of when they've gotten Darius Slay in the last couple years. I thought that was the 2018 matchup against Houston, which I consistently point to how they think, how I think they should run their defense moving forward. And a lot of it was that two linebacker system with a lot of big nickel, big dime type packages, which frankly, I thought they did pretty good in yesterday. And a lot of it comes down to having Rodney McLeod, having Will Parks. Those guys are solid players. Will Parks is a glue guy, somebody that is a versatile piece you could toss all over. And frankly, I think I have to give myself a little pat on the back saying that Rodney McLeod and my stance on signing him over Malcolm Jenkins was the correct way to
right.
go about
yeah,
it.
Man. And McLeod, he looks awesome.
Everywhere. You talk about Brandon Graham getting better with age. Man, Rodney McLeod, you talk about the leadership element on that defense. They have it. And
he'll
talk
be back
about
next year too, man. Like, he's not going anywhere.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Jalen Mills, dude, you got to give him some props because he's been asked to do everything for this team the past couple weeks between moving to safety, to corner, to slot. Mm-hmm. He's done it. I mean, as much as people want to hate on his limited athletic abilities, he's a guy that, frankly, fits the system really well. And I think that this defense, like, if they play like this, Lou, they might be onto something because if Carson continues to be a liability, as long as your defense steps up like this, you're going to win more games than not.
Well, and just the defensive line, man, I want to go back to it. It's just so deep right now. Mm-hmm. Even Vinny Curry had a good day yesterday, and I was laughing to myself yesterday watching the game. I'm like, holy cow, Vinny Curry is like the sixth, seventh player that you mentioned when you're talking about the D-line, because BG and Fletcher, like, they're your top two. Sweat and Barnett look really good this year. Hargrave and Jackson. You finally get to Vinny Curry, who's a proven, a consistent defensive end that's started a lot of games for over a decade now. So they have riches up front on the defensive line, and the secondary has been holding their own this year. And so when you have those two units clicking, it makes it easier on the linebackers. And when you don't have Nate Geary out there, I think, Gino, that also makes it easier on the linebackers.
Absolutely, and yes, you were playing a rookie quarterback, but look
at the
other
I do want to see this kind of performance against a better team, for sure. Let's say that.
But I mean, hey, you hold Ezekiel Elliott to under 65 yards.
A guy that always gashes you.
You didn't allow them to get into the end zone. Mm-hmm. That's huge, something that even against bad, against bad quarterbacks that Jim Schwartz has kind of allowed his defenses to do. So you're kind of figuring it out now, like that red zone defense that was so good a couple years ago, starting to get into a rhythm. That run defense, which has always been paramount for this team, starting to get it together again. I mean, you're holding unbelievable running backs to no yardage at all. That's huge, and that's going to win you a lot of games in late in the season when those fourth quarter game grinding runners, like when you're facing Aaron Jones and you're facing Seattle, which loves to do that with their guys, and you're facing New Orleans with Kamara, those are going to be big impact plays. And if you do what you did yesterday against those teams, it's going to be awesome because Darius Slay being healthy is arguably the biggest impact on this defense this season. And when you have a shutdown guy like he did against Amari Cooper yesterday,
just
Lou, how
them.
Long have we been waiting for this since Asante Samuel? We finally have it.
And Gino, like, we both agree they still need long-term pieces in the secondary. Mm-hmm. They need another corner, maybe two. They need another safety for sure. But one, this player that me and you have been begging for makes such an impact. Like, having a true CB1 does so much for the secondary that this unit, although there's a lot of work to be done still, it has not been a liability this year. How many times has the ball been thrown over their heads, man? I mean, they're, I think, fourth in the league when it comes to fewest 20-plus yard passing plays. I know they're top three. They've only allowed maybe one 40-plus yard play. Their secondary has been solid this year, and most of it is, of course, it's because of Rodney McLeod, too, and a lot of these guys have had good days, but Darius Slay coming in has done so much for just this entire unit.
Definitely, and it stunk that he went out because you saw the impact of literally erasing, like, the one episode of SpongeBob when he gets the pencil from that falls into the ocean and he can literally erase things. Like, that's what he did to Amari Cooper yesterday.
Who Amari Cooper, by the way, consistently has kicked the Eagles' ass the past couple of years.
Eating
them
alive.
Yeah, so the fact that Slay,
alive.
I think Slay held him to, what, no catches in the first half?
Mm-hmm. He didn't have a catch until Slay went out of the game, and you draft to beat your division, and you team build to beat your division, and what is Dallas's best weapon moving forward, and it's that three-headed monster at the wide receiver position, regardless of the quarterback, is those guys all are talented players.
Which is why I was still nervous yesterday, man, because when you've got Lamb, Gallup, and Cooper, and you've got Maddox and NRC out there, that's still a mismatch.
And a lot of those guys won their one-on-one matchups, Lou. They did. We've been waiting for that for a while, so props to them. Like, the one thing that I would say would be the only negative to the defense so far was those early game not adjusting to getting after the quarterback and being a little too cute. But I think Schwartz, better late than never, turned things around and was getting after the young quarterback late in the game. But when it came down to it, Lou, you have to give all hats off to all 11 guys on that defense that were out there, because I think a lot of those guys won their one-on-one matchups when it mattered. I mean, the strip sack in the red zone twice, they did it. I mean, that's huge. That's just unbelievable to get those turnovers. Something that they were struggling to do early on in the season. You talk about how Wentz turning the ball over is a benefit for other teams. Our defense is finally starting to give our offense good field position, even though they're not doing much with it. But hey,
yeah,
it's good to see this defense getting in the right direction for the amount of money that they have spent on that unit.
100%. We'll get into some positives on the offensive side of the football coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri joining you on this Monday edition of the show, and it's sponsored by the best tasting protein bar out there, Built Bar. Built Bar has 18 amazing flavors, 6 new ones. You got caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. It's a healthy alternative to your everyday snack. 19 grams of protein in every bar and only 180 calories. If you go to BuiltBar.com today and use the promo code LOCKEDON, you're going to get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, Eagles fans, Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri recapping the Eagles' big win on Sunday night to stay in first place in the NFC East against the Dallas Cowboys. The Eagles have now shut out the Cowboys when it comes to touchdowns in two straight matchups. We talked about all the positives, Gino, on defense in segment two. While we wrap up this edition of the podcast, I mean, look, we talked about how just not good enough from Carson Wentz, not good enough when it comes to Doug Peterson, the two most important pieces of this franchise, I think, and I think you agree as well, obviously, the head coach and the quarterback. But I do want to say, even though you only put up 15 points against, or not 15, I'm sorry, but a team that, Gino, I'm sorry, how many points did they get up on that defense? Oh, no, I'm right.
You're right.
Because McLeod scored the touchdown. Yeah, I was thinking, I forgot McLeod. Yeah, so actually 15. Against that kind of defense, not a lot of positives, but what I will say is, I'm very happy with that Fulgham-Rager tandem. That looks like it could be your future at receiver. Fulgham, another 70-plus yard performance and a touchdown in the game. He has the most yards in the NFL since he's been activated from the practice squad. And Gino, Rager coming back looked good, too. He had that big touchdown, a two-point conversion, a big third-down conversion, nearly an insane touchdown grab at the end. It was just a great play from the Cowboys' corner. You look at those two, you mentioned early on today in the show and on Twitter, they've got that little D-Jax, Jeremy Maclin thing going on, and even, too, with the way Fulgham plays the X, they're kind of, right now, what Jackson and Alshon were supposed to be. I mean, they look great together.
Right, that's the thing. You kind of don't just have, like, this X and Z receiver. Like, you kind of have had
they're two both versatile pieces that can play everywhere.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things that they lauded Jalen Rager for coming out of college, was that he could travel all over the offensive line there and play wide receiver out of the slot, out of the X, out of the Z.
Yeah, same with Travis inside too. Yeah, for sure.
And 100%, you get those vibes to Deshaun with the explosiveness, with the yards after the catch ability. I love that they were trying to get him involved in the screen game early on in Jalen Rager, and it's only a matter of time before we see one of those Deshaun Jackson 89-yard runs, yards after the catch from Jalen Rager. And Travis Fulham, man, like, if you don't look at him and see Jeremy Maclin, like, I don't know what to tell you. It's just a very good route-running wide receiver who excels in those intermediate areas, and frankly, man, he does exactly what you want. He's consistent catching the ball. He doesn't give you too many drops, and he's frankly a perfect number two to Jalen Rager. And somebody mentioned to you that you almost have that trio with Jason Avant and Greg Ward.
Right, yeah.
I forgot Jason Avant was on the coaching staff this year, Lou, so he's playing that exact role, I'm sure, under the precipice of Avant's guidance, being your number three receiver to just be that guy that is there for big catches when it matters. Did have a drop yesterday on a crossing route, but Greg Ward is a nice, reliable number three, sprinkled in with a little John Hightower, and hopefully could get Quez Watkins in there with a Dallas Goedert, with a rejuvenated Boston Scott and Corey Clement the last two games.
Those two have looked really good the past 2 weeks, for sure.
You're seeing what this young core could be moving forward. And frankly, I'm inspired, Lou. As much as the quarterback play let them down yesterday, there's a lot of young players on that offense that give me a lot of hope. Nate Herbig looked pretty good.
Jordan Mailata, right tackle.
Yeah, Jordan Mailata looked good moving left to right. Even Jason Peters, man, had a good game. So finally, they're getting right on the offensive side of the ball, and it's a good outlook, not just for the short term, but for the long term as well.
Yeah, Mailata, it's really impressive. I mean, this is a kid that has barely played football his entire life. He's been playing it for a couple years, and you saw how detrimental it was, you know, last year moving Andre Dillard from left tackle to right tackle against Seattle, and how he just was not able to do it. He even said it's like writing with your left hand, and then you ask Mailata to do it yesterday, and he shows up. I mean, he got beat once pretty bad by Lawrence, but outside of that, he held his own the entire game. I mean, that's really impressive, and again, it just goes to show how good of an offensive line coach Jeff Stout is, that Mailata can be asked to do that and hold his own, and how Nate Herbig can continue to grade out really well week after week. And yes, Scott looked good, Clement. There's a lot of young talent on this offense that you should be excited about. One last thing on Travis Fulgham, Gino. You mentioned how he does look a lot like Macklin. One thing that made me think of that too, watching the game yesterday and really throughout this past month of games for Fulgham, he's so good along the sidelines. Like, his body control, his ability to separate without a lot of space, that's something the Eagles really have not had a lot through the past couple years. And I remember Macklin just being so good in confined spaces on the outside as well, with making some incredible sideline grabs every week. And Fulgham did that yesterday. His two biggest plays were along the sideline in the end zone, that touchdown over Diggs. The other big play where he just gets right up on Diggs on his toes and makes a miss down the left sideline. He's been doing that. He did that against the Giants, against the Steelers. He makes a lot of big plays in that area, which is where Macklin really made his money too. So the comparison's there. And, you know, every week I kept saying, I don't know if Fulgham's going to be the guy yet. Look, he's playing really well, but I got to see a bigger sample size. But every single week he just keeps doing the same thing, and he's making his money in so many different areas of the game that I'm kind of convincing myself that he is a piece moving forward that they should invest in, that he's a reason maybe you don't go out and do something else at wide receiver.
Right. I was thinking about it. I said to my fiance yesterday, I'm like, we might have the guys moving forward, and you might just have to draft a might be a luxury to draft a guy in the first or second round next year, Lou, and that's a position that you want to be in. And same with cornerback, and same with safety. A lot of these positions where you needed those guys to step up, these young players. I mean, offensive guard and offensive tackle, Lou, I don't think you need to draft guys moving like next year.
You have a lot better depth than you thought you did heading into the year, for sure.
For sure, and that's one of the things, even with these injuries, is that you are able to evaluate a lot of this young talent. And you said, I need to see more out of Fulham. Well, you've seen a ton. You've seen a ton out of Jordan Mailata. You've seen a ton out of Nate Herbig. And you're starting to see more and more of these young guys coming to their own. And Fulham, man, we didn't have a receiver over 500 yards last year.
He's already 65
yards
that.
Away. Yeah. 65 yards away, Lou, and we still have half the season to go.
The great sign, Gino, is the sample size is getting bigger and the consistency is still there. And that's when you know you have something.
Right, yeah, and let's look at it, just this wrap up this episode, look at the data as a whole. Like, you're starting to see a lot of these guys figure it out and moving forward for the better. And if Carson, somebody that we've seen enough sample size to know that he has it in him, if he can stay on course for 8 games, Lou, which I know he can and which we've seen him do, the sky is the limit for this team, dude, because they're getting healthy at the right time. This division is open for the taking. Outside of Seattle and Tampa Bay, who in the NFC really scares the life out of you? To me, I think they can play with any team as long as things go right and they don't take a shotgun and shoot both of their feet off.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a perfect way to end it. And the Eagles are still in first place at 3-4-1. They have a bye week, and then they'll turn around in a couple weeks and take on the New York Giants once again with an opportunity to get to 500 at 4-4-1, or I guess a little above 500 with the tie. I don't know.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So Louis DiBiase, Gino Camilleri wrapping up this Monday edition of Locked On Eagles. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will be back tomorrow. The NFL trade deadline is tomorrow evening. So me and Gino will get into, is this team going to be a buyer? Are they going to be a seller? What's Howie going to do tomorrow? Are they going to do a little bit of both? We'll get into that on tomorrow's edition of the podcast. Be sure to subscribe on any podcast platform and follow us on Twitter at DiBiaseLOE and at Gino_LOE. For Mr. Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. As always, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.